I'm Jessica Kidwell, and this is Neuroversity, a space to expand our understanding of neurodiversity and to elevate neurodivergent voices and experiences. Today, we're going back to basics, an introductory 101 level course, if you will, and taking an in-depth look at what it means to be neurodivergent. And by that, I mean the definition as well as who gets to decide if someone is in fact neurodivergent. Because much like many things, there is not a definitive answer on this. Depending on who you ask, neurodivergence can look many ways, which has led me to question, what is a neurodivergent brain and who gets to gatekeep whether an individual can claim themselves as neurodivergent? Okay, curious minds, let's get started. Anytime I describe this podcast to someone, the part that trips me up the most is defining who this podcast is for. You see, I believe in my heart of hearts that it is actually for everyone, that there is no possible listener that could not benefit from becoming more educated and aware of neurodivergence. And then I get lost in the muddle when the follow-up question is, okay, fine, but who is neurodivergent? When I first began this podcast in October of 2021, the introductory episode, First Things First, included my definition at the time of neurodivergence. And that was, neurodivergent is anyone who has some form of less typical developmental, intellectual, or cognitive function. Some of the generally accepted labels or diagnoses that fall into neurodivergent are autism, sensory processing disorder, ADHD, Tourette's, dyslexia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, auditory processing disorder, and much more. I stopped there. And now, to fact check myself 8 months later, it's still true. Ish, but is it the whole picture? Not exactly. For a more nuanced understanding of who is neurodivergent, I turned to Kasiana Asasumas, a multiply neurodivergent neurodiversity activist who actually coined the terms neurodivergent and neurodivergence in 2000. As defined by Kasiana, neurodivergent just means a brain that diverges. Autistic people, ADHD people, people with learning disabilities, epileptic people, people with mental illnesses, people with MS or Parkinson's or apraxia or cerebral palsy or dyspraxia or no specific diagnosis but wonky lateralization or something. That is all it means. It's not another damn tool of exclusion. It is specifically a tool of inclusion. And if you don't want to be associated with, quote unquote, those people, then you're the one who needs another word. Neurodivergent is for all of us. Kasiana doesn't mince words, and for that I'm very grateful. But to get a little bit more scaffolding on what the definition might look like to those who don't know, I also tend to get information from Dr. Nick Walker, an autistic writer and educator that is best known for her foundational work on the neurodiversity paradigm and the development of the term neuroqueer. Dr. Walker provides a bit more by defining and differentiating genetic and innate neurodivergence with acquired neurodivergence. She says, for example, autism, ADHD, dyslexia, those would all be innate forms of neurodivergence. And any neurological differences from a health condition or injury would be forms of acquired neurodivergence. And yet, there seems to be a natural tendency amongst neurodivergent advocates to narrow the definition of who gets to claim being neurodivergent and frankly, narrow it in a way that tends to skew towards more of those innate examples. So that leads me to the second part of this episode, which is about gatekeeping. The Oxford Dictionary definition of gatekeeping I'm referring to is this: the activity of controlling and usually limiting general access to something. To narrow the definition of who gets to claim being neurodivergent seems to be in direct conflict with the intent of the creator of the word itself. Remember, earlier I said that Cassiana coined this word in 2000, and their intention was to include, not exclude. So why, amongst some in the neurodivergent movement, does there seem to be a desire to exclude, specifically towards mental health-related neurotypes? For example, a quick Twitter search on neurodivergent and depression will land you into a rabbit hole of opinions masquerading as facts on why anxiety and depression and PTSD cannot stand alone on their own as being a neurodivergent type. They can only be considered neurodivergent if they co-occur with another, I guess more valid, neurotype such as autism or ADHD. And the reason for this narrowing of definitions probably boils down to scarcity mindset, which frankly is a direct result of the social model of disability. We need to revisit Dr. Nick Walker's work on disability to fully understand the social model. To quote Dr. Walker, "When we say a person is disabled, we mean that society isn't properly set up to enable their participation." So that's the definition of the social model of disability. And we have built an entire system of laws and regulations where resources and supports are few and far between, which then kind of makes sense that there's an innate urge to gatekeep who can claim this disability. When there is a perceived finite amount of awareness or understanding or, frankly, accommodations available, it makes sense that some would want to narrow the scope of who gets to receive those precious resources. But what if a person can claim a neurodivergent label without also claiming to be disabled? What if the gatekeeping needs to be less about who is or is not neurodivergent and more about the impacts that the divergence has on each individual's ability to live the life that they want to live? What if my very real and very valid neurodivergence doesn't actually negate your very real and very valid neurodivergence? And going back to the beginning when I said I get lost in a muddle when it comes time to define neurodivergence, what if it wasn't actually hard at all? What if we listen to the originator of the term and define it as a brain that diverges momentarily, situationally, permanently, whatever? Suddenly, the need to gatekeep feels a lot less weighty. And instead, for me, Rihanna comes to mind. Yeah, you heard me right. Rihanna. When we look around and feel completely alone because it just doesn't feel like we fit anywhere and no one understands us, that's when it's time to quote Rihanna, specifically her hit Umbrella. "When the sun shines, we'll shine together. I told you I'll be here forever. Said I'll always be your friend. Took an oath, I'm going to stick it out to the end. Now that it's raining more than ever, know that we'll still have each other. You can stand under my umbrella. You can stand under my umbrella." Not a gate. Not a gate. Well, fellow curious minds, after this episode, I think I'm going to start carrying an umbrella more often. Be sure to head to the show notes for this episode to check out links to all the sources that I quoted. There's some pretty amazing people doing incredible work on dismantling gates and passing out umbrellas. All right, class. Dismissed for now. Neuroversity is hosted and produced by Jessica Kidwell. Our audio engineer is Jarrett Nicolay at Mixtape Studios. Jarrett also created our theme music. Graphic design for Neuroversity by Kevin Adkins. Web support is provided by George Fox. For more information about this episode, ways to support the podcast, or anything related to Neuroversity, please visit our website at www.neuroversitypod.com. You can also follow us on your podcast app and social media sites. We are at Neuroversity Pod on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And if you like what we're doing, please tell others about Neuroversity and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. There's plenty of room for more curious minds to enroll.